Yo, what is up, energy fam? Welcome back to the next episode of Primal Alchemy's Red Pill Initiation Hour, here with your host, Chris Story. All right, guys, it's been a while since the last upload. It's been about a week and a half. Normally, I am pretty consistent with the two episodes a week every week, but I have been a little bit occupied over the previous week and a bit. I was away at Glastonbury Festival here in the UK. Anyone who's listening stateside that doesn't know Glastonbury Festival, it's pretty much like Coachella, but not as fuck girlish. It's got a little bit of more spiritual roots attached to it, even though it was pretty evident that it is disconnected from those roots nowadays. But yeah, I had an immensely powerful 8-gram psilocybin trip at the festival that completely obliterated me, and I'm thinking of maybe doing a special episode series of my own experiences with plant medicines and psychedelic compounds, and I wanted you guys to give me a bit of feedback if that would be something you'd be interested in, because I know a lot of you who follow my stories are always up to date with it, but I've never really gone in depth and told you the experiences I've had. And yeah, I think you'd really enjoy it. It was an amazing experience. But let me know. Reach out to me on Instagram, Primal Alchemy UK, and just give me the heads up if that would be something that you'd be interested in listening to. And if so, I will start doing more episodes just by myself, discussing this sort of shit. So yeah, other than that, guys, big news as well. Big news, which is that the Primal Alchemy brand is evolving. Much like a Pikachu into Raichu, it is going up to the next level, and we're really going to be doing shit that no one else is doing in the world at this moment, which I'm so excited for. I've been working on this behind the scenes for a long time now, and yeah, I think that you're really going to love what we've got in store. We've got a whole new range of health supplement products about to be released. We're going to be launching our Initiated Attire, which is our clothing brand. So yes, I am now a big time fashion designer as well. And we're also going to be releasing our Avatar Upgrade Labs, which is going to be our part of the Primal Alchemy website, where we sell the world's best biohacking tools, which are all vetted and audited by myself and which I believe in. And I want to give you guys the best that I can for what I believe to be complete superhuman optimization, physical, mental, spiritual optimization. I said it from the start, and now the Primal Alchemy brand is really going to start to represent that ethos and philosophy. So yeah, hope you are looking forward to it just as much as me. So over the next few weeks, I might not be releasing these episodes as regular as normal. I may be just be doing one a week. I'll have to see. I have got, like I said, an extra workload on my hands to deal with. And yeah, I just want to make sure that the quality of the podcast don't dip because of that. So yeah, as always, guys, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Google Podcasts. If you're listening to this on Spotify, then please jump over onto Instagram and drop me a message. Let me know what you think. And also, if you're listening to it on YouTube, then yeah, just drop me a comment below and subscribe, and that would be massively appreciated. As always, I always give you an exclusive discount code. That's the code REDPILL. That's the code REDPILL, that when used at checkout, you'll get the 10% off anything within the shopping basket at the time of purchase at primalalchemy.co.uk. So if you're brand new to the brand and you are unfamiliar with what Primal Alchemy is about, we have our Vitruvian protein. That's our flagship organic whey protein superfood blend. We've got our adaptogens, nootropics, prebiotics, and high vibrational superfoods all mixed into one powder. That's Vitruvian protein. Check that shit out. So at the moment, guys, obviously we only have the Vitruvian protein and our ancestral potential coaching programs. But as we go and upgrade the whole brand and we get all these new products out, then this code REDPILL, the 10% off, will really start to make the difference, because we're going to have a lot more products for you guys to choose from. So again, if you are brand new though, check it out, primalalchemy.co.uk, use the code REDPILL. All right, so moving on to today's episode. I think you're really going to enjoy this one. Today's guest is with Christy Shorshuk. I hope I said that right, Christy. It's such a hard one for me. I always struggle with these names. Hope you enjoy it, guys. And normally I always give a little bit of a breakdown beforehand, but I've kind of, like, even though I knew I did it anyway, I'm now more self-aware that I do it, where I give an introduction to the guest, and then I start the episode and I give another introduction. So I think from now on, yeah, I'm just going to jump straight in on it. So enjoy. Morpheus, as always, tell these fools what's up.
You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
As above, so below, what lies without resides within. Time for growth to begin. Mental, physical, and spiritual. We find balance with all three as we focus on totality, the whole, not the half. This is for those on a spiritual path, looking for the clues to the answers of life. But the truth ain't always nice, so leave your ego at the door. Let your inner lion roar and your spirit soar as we go deep down to the molecular level. Tap into the body with some yogic breath. Throw in some calisthenics for a true strength test. Like the shamans of old, we use the nature to heal with a little bit of DMT to reveal. This whole life journey is a little surreal, and your mind needs a leader, not a follower in life. Let your mind be the master and you pay a hefty price. This next 60 minutes is about self-mastery. It's not an easy path and it's a lifelong journey, but we up to empower with this red pill initiation hour. With this red pill initiation hour, brought to you by Primal Alchemy.
The Matrix is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
Three, two, one, and oh shit. Sweet Osiris, guys, we're back. It's episode 52 of the Red Pill Initiation Hour. And today, guys, we're going to go into depths of the ketogenic diet. So if that word triggered you, if it triggered the parasites in your stomach that's got you addicted to sugar, then hey, it may be time to put down that unicorn frappuccino and bagel meal deal and have a listen, because this is exactly what you're going to need in order to get your health back on track. So today's guest is Miss Christy Shorshuk. I hope I pronounced that one right, Christy. Christy
yep,
is
good.
A ketogenic, and that, did I get that right?
You did.
That was awesome. Yes, we're on a roll already. So yeah, Christy is a ketogenic and metabolic therapy science writer. Quite the title, and well earned at that. So me and Christy have been going back and forth for a while on Instagram. And yeah, as usual, guys, pick up the trend by now. Instagram is the one. It is the one of the great minds of the 21st century where we converse and trade ideas. And so let's just jump straight into it. So Christy, welcome on to the Red Pill Initiation Hour. Great to have you on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Chris. I'm excited.
Yeah, for sure. So I briefly mentioned then that you run your own sort of personal blog and you're a science writer, which is quite the title to have. And yeah, I've been going through your page for quite some time now, and it's just real solid, decent information. Some of it goes quite deep. Some of it's a good sort of intro level for people that are brand new to this whole ketogenic realm and sort of dipping their toes into the water of ketosis. But yeah, I really, really enjoy your content, and I've been looking forward to this one for a while. So for everyone that is a little bit unfamiliar with who you are, if they haven't heard of you and your work and content, could you give us a little bit of a rundown of, yeah, who you are, where you've come from, and how you've got to where you are to today?
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, I'm a science writer. I got into this space very early on. My grandparents actually own a health food store, and I grew up working there every summer. And that kind of exposed me
really?
To the world of natural medicine. Yeah.
Damn, yo, that's lucky.
Yeah. So I used to like read books on vitamins and minerals and just like know all the supplements that we sold at the store, so I could be an asset even at the age of like 13 working there. I always thought I was going to go into naturopathic medicine. I met a lot of naturopaths and just being in that space. And then I actually got into botany, which was my undergrad, because I thought like, oh, botany, plants, plant medicine. I just really, really, really liked being in the plant medicine world. But then I started experimenting with diet. So I started at the age of like 15, where I went vegan, actually, first off, because at that time, veganism was gonna save the world and save everyone's health. So they stated. But then I actually went, got into CrossFit, which if you didn't eat paleo and do CrossFit, then were you really doing CrossFit? So I got into paleo. I just really liked experimenting with diet. I tried. And then obviously as the ketogenic diet started gaining traction in the media, and I was like, oh, another diet to try. And I transitioned from a vegan diet basically into, so, okay, I need to backtrack a little here.
Go for it.
My whole history with diet and everything was all about just experimenting and being able to talk from experience rather than like weight loss or anything. I've always been very lean as a teenager. But I went down the rabbit hole of veganism when Instagram became a thing. So I definitely was an active member of the online, like, low fat, whole food, oil free vegan community, but I kind of kept that like on the down low. I never wanted a label or anything, but I knew what was going on in this community. I actually used Instagram as a way to meet friends while traveling, and I would use this vegan community. So I was very active in this community. But then I was introduced to the ketogenic diet just through, I think I actually got introduced through Dom D'Agostino on Joe Rogan. And I was like, oh, another diet to try. And at this time, I was very skinny. Like, my arms were just like, I looked kind of like emaciated from my vegan history. And like, I even went through a stint of raw veganism, which I also kept like on the down low. But I just didn't look healthy. My family was concerned for me, and I don't know, it was bad. And then I got into the ketogenic diet, and this was a really big transition for me because I was basically adopting a diet based on a macronutrient that I had actively avoided for so long. So it was a really good mental experience for me to almost realize these barriers that I set up for myself subconsciously. And so it was really good to expose myself to a different style of eating that kind of got me away from this unhealthy relationship with food that I had been developing. Yeah. Subconsciously, I would say, like, I wasn't meaning to, like, restrict things. It just like kind of happened naturally. So then I really, really liked the ketogenic diet, and I loved how there was science to back it up. So coming from a science undergrad, I really loved that aspect of the diet. It was the only diet where there was like a biomarker, a blood marker. There was cellular mechanisms that you could study in a lab. Like, no other diet offered that. So it gave me some sort of purpose to, or like something to read about and something to understand, versus like all the other diets that are studied in the scientific literature all have to revolve around like weight loss and that kind of, and like, there's no biomarkers or nothing definitive about these diets other than what's on your plate. So I think I was really drawn to the ketogenic diet because I was like, wow, like I can know what genes are expressed, or I can see that this is used for like longevity pathways and like mTOR, IGF-1, like all our nutrient sensing pathways. And that's what really got me intrigued. And I was like, okay, wow, I want to study this. I want to go down like the route of academia. And so I started reaching out to all the professors that studied the ketogenic diet in some form. And I got in contact with Dom D'Agostino. And for some reason, I don't know if it was luck of the draw or what he saw in me or anything, but he kind of took me under his wing. And at the time, he wasn't looking for any students to join his lab, but he offered me a role in to handling all the education and outreach projects that were kind of outside of the lab. So it was a way for me to be involved in the science without being in academia. And so everything I learned about the ketogenic diet really came from him. And I think that kind of sets me apart in that I was never exposed to any biases or misinformation getting into this world, because literally everything I've learned has come out of the mouth of Dom D'Agostino. So I know that what I know is to be true, and it just gives me the confidence to write about it. And then having like him fact check my work and everything, I've learned a lot about what's true, the nuances of the ketogenic diet, and just the science around it, because I've been involved with him and his lab, and it's just honestly been such an amazing experience for me. And now I'm not even really considering grad school anymore, because I'm realizing that I want to be a voice, and I want to be able to focus my research very particularly in terms of like educating the public about the ketogenic diet. And yes, obviously grad school would help with that and give me credit and just immediate respect, if that's like, I could say that, like having a PhD or something. But I think being in this world, I'm realizing more and more that you can be self-taught, and that doesn't mean that you're uneducated. So yeah, that was a really long-winded story of how I got into this space.
No, it's fine. That's what I was looking for, Chrissy. That's what I was looking for. I love it when there's a little bit of substance to someone's story. And yeah, you know, growing up, I was very similar in that I went through a stage where I wanted to be like a naturopathic doctor. And I was, after the age of like 15, 16, you could find me in the aisles of a health food store, which are horribly shit compared to the health food stores that you've got over in the States. It would have been a lot more fun as a teenager if I was stateside than it was in the UK. It's very limited here in terms of what we have available, but still.
Hey, I was in London a bit ago, and they had some good products that were not.
Where were you in London?
Like right in London.
Can you remember what this is? Because I do not know many shops in London that are actually, I guess there's a few. I shouldn't shit on a wall of London, but yeah, I guess there's a few. But that's recently. Yeah, that's recently though. And if we take it back like a few years, even like 5 years ago, it's only recently that it started to pick up. Like, from what I've heard, a friend of mine has a contact within. I know this is slightly off subject. Bit of a tangent, but I'll kind of relate it back. Yeah, a friend of mine has a contact who is high up within Mars, and do you get Mars bars over in the States?
I'm actually in Canada, but yes. Oh, you can get Mars Canada. Bars in Canada.
Okay. Yeah, so Mars bars in Canada. So he has a contact that's very high up in Mars within the marketing side of the company, and they basically, what they say is that the UK is about five years behind anything that North America produces or sort of experiments with. So for example, like the ketogenic diet is still mostly unheard of here in the UK. You'd be surprised. Like pretty much like in the health and fitness industry, it's at those early doors where people are just starting to talk about it. And when I say talk about it, they're trying to shit on it. Before there's no big names attached to it to show the benefits of it. Obviously you've got people that are going to be that don't really follow mainstream thought, and they're going to have listened to Dom, they're going to have listened to many of the big names within the industry, like worldwide, so they're going to be very switched on with it and they're going to be experimenting with it. But in terms of mainstream, you could walk into a health food store and ask for like is this keto suitable? And they're going to look at you like, what are you on about? Like keto? Like they're not going to have any idea. And that's why I think it's important to note what you said then, where it's nowadays, it's important to be essentially like an autodidact, where you're self-taught, you self-teach yourself. You don't need a fancy certificate from a privatized institution to tell you that you have a certain level of knowledge. You can gain everything that you need through
yeah, self-study through, or by finding a mentor. A really good mentor is way more valuable than being accepted into a Ivy League or our equivalent, which is a Russell Group educational institution. In my personal opinion, I think a solid mentor who has gone through the trenches and has got a lot of experience, that sort of one-to-one time with them, it's way more valuable than a degree. Even though I went through the traditional route of going to university and getting a degree, I think those days are limited. I think people now, everything's going to be done online. People are going to start following their interests outside of schools. And I think there's a lot of potential for people to really start to take their personal education to the next level. And if you do a degree, you are restricted to and kept within the barriers of the curriculum, whereas your interest is going to cater for about or make up about 0.9% of that curriculum. Whereas when you're doing shit for yourself, I mean, you're only going to read what you're interested in. You're only going to learn what you're interested in. And because you're much more passionate about what you're learning, you're going to retain more. You're going to comprehend more of the information. And it's going to resonate with you so much more than something that you read in a textbook or some research papers late at night in the library while you've got an essay to hand in the next day, which you're just going to be able to paraphrase, regurgitate, and probably get a shit mark in the process. But
if you wanted to learn about the ketogenic diet in school, like, it's not in the textbooks. No professor is really going to teach it. And if they are, like, who knows if they're going to teach it properly. So in terms of ketogenic nutrition, I think it is best to be self-taught, because who knows if you're going to learn it properly in, like, academia or, like, in an undergrad or something.
And this brings me on to one of the points I wanted to cover with you, which is, what do you believe today is, like, some of the biggest misconceptions about the ketogenic diet? Like, when people are starting off and they're like, okay, I'll give this a go, like, where do people go wrong? Like, what's the first hurdle that people kind of trip over, and then what does that then lead to in terms of their decisions that are essentially a branch of that initial, like, wrong step?
Yeah, I think starting out, people are just overwhelmed by like the numbers. So, like, tracking, like, knowing that, oh, I have to stay under 40, 50 grams of carbs a day. I have to hit 100 and whatever grams of fat a day. So you get really obsessed with tracking and the numbers and hitting those goals. And then you base your food choices around those numbers instead of choosing the foods first and then figuring out what that means in, like, Chronometer or MyFitnessPal or something. So when that happens, like, say you've eaten your allotted carbs for the day, and you, for dinner, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm starving, but I have no carbs left. And then people just eat, like, a block of cheese or something that is, like, they're just eating it because that's what fits. And it almost comes back to, like, if it fits your macros, it's just a different style of it. And that can be, it's very non-intuitive. So even when I started out the ketogenic diet, like, I'm obsessed with food. I know what foods have what macros, et cetera. But I still struggled with, like, knowing what to eat. So at some points I was eating too many vegetables, for example, and I was going over my carb allowance for the day, and then I would just, like, eat fat bombs at night. It was just, like, not a healthy ketogenic diet. And, like, all the ingredients that I was eating was healthy. I've always stayed away from, like, refined, like, vegetable oils and stuff like that. I've never eaten those. So I honestly found it difficult because I was focusing on tracking. And I think tracking is important, especially if you're using a ketogenic diet for therapeutic reasons, because you actually need to be in ketosis. But for the average Joe just trying to eat low carb, I think that tracking can kind of mess with you a little and mess with your food choices. So I think that it can alter the way you approach a ketogenic diet. And I've later realized that, like, these low glycemic, non-starchy, non-sugary vegetables, like, you don't really have to limit them. They're honestly pretty euglycemic. Like, they're not going to have that big of an effect on your blood glucose, even if you're, it comes out into chronometer as 60 grams of carbs. Like, you don't have to stress out about that. And people aren't even testing their ketones for the most part anyways. So, I mean, it doesn't really make that big of a difference. Like, if you really want to be in ketosis, then yes, you have to restrict carbs pretty severely, probably under 50 grams total carbs, not net carbs. Net carbs gets a little confusing for people because they start eating like processed keto foods, and these foods are great for transitioning into a healthy diet, but they, like, if you're eating like 13 grams of erythritol, but then you're like, oh, but the net carbs are this. It's, I don't know. It's just easier to track total carbs, because then you're not, yeah, relying on these like packaged non-real foods. Although, I mean, I still eat them from time to time. I love my ketogenic sweets, but I know I do better without them. But yeah, so transitioning to the diet, I think people just get overwhelmed by the numbers, and then that just messes up their food choices. I think that people should just not stress out, and not even focus on, if they're measuring ketones, like, not even focus on getting into ketosis or stressing out about that. It's, at the end of the day, that's not worth it. Stressing over food is just as unhealthy as eating unhealthy food. And the mental aspect of, like, having an unhealthy relationship with food, it can be stressful. And I think having a healthy relationship with food is very, very important to overall health.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And in terms of the relationship with food, do you think the standardized American diet has created like a real sort of distorted relationship that we have with food in terms of, like, I don't know if you've heard of her before. Her name is Nora Gagaudas.
No.
Someone that, Christy, you need to check out Nora. She's, you'll really like her. She was one of the, like, I guess she was like one of the titans of the ketogenic diet sort of way back before it started to become mainstream. And she comes at it from a very primal sort of, I guess, like a paleo perspective.
Okay.
And she one of her quotes that she says is that always resonated with me is that we have an unnatural abundance of unnatural food like substances. What that has done is it's created a outlook in of food that we look at food as a source of entertainment instead of nourishment. And because of that, our food choices are wired to a completely different sort of neuro pathway than it would be if we were consuming food for what it is, for, like, yeah, survival, the intrinsic value and nutritional density, not because it tastes fucking delicious and it's got shit tons of monosodium glutamate in, which kind of enhances the flavor and makes you think that, oh man, I could smash more than this. And then before you know it, you've smashed, like, yeah, a good tons worth of food. So what do you think it is that's really sort of alters people's perception of food and their relationship with it? And what would you define a healthy relationship with food as?
Yeah, well, society has definitely set us up for failure when it comes to the food science and the abundance of food and access to food 24/7. People are just so accustomed to, if they have like the slightest bit of hunger or any desire to eat, they have food right there. Like, that's clearly unnatural. We did not evolve that way. But I think that what the ketogenic diet has done for me personally, it's kind of removed my obsession with food, it's really, really downregulated my obsession with food. Because before, when I was constantly having to eat all the time because I was on a very high carb, low fat diet, I was just like constantly eating, and I would have to think about food all the time. I'd be like, okay, I'm going to plan my day around where I'm going to eat, or I have to pack a bunch of food. But the ketogenic diet actually is really, really great, and it's very liberating for the mental aspect of food, because you just, you can go periods without having to eat. You can fast very easily. And we now know that fasting has lots of benefits, lots of longevity implications. And the ketogenic diet definitely makes fasting easier, and it has removed my obsession with food. Like, I don't stress over having to go to a restaurant anymore. I know that there's going to be options for me. It's kind of counterintuitive, because you think that the ketogenic diet on paper seems like the most restrictive diet out there, in terms of like macros and everything. But to me, it's been the least restrictive I've ever been with a way of eating. And so mentally, it's been very liberating that way. I think that it could work that way for a lot of people. Like, you don't have to constantly be thinking about food all day. And when your next meal is when you truly get hungry. If you're eating the right foods, you can start listening to your body and eat more intuitively. And I think the ketogenic diet does that. And it goes against everything we've been taught. And in terms of like, eat 6 small meals a day, eat 3 large meals with snacks in between, like, don't skip breakfast, never skip a meal, like, don't go this long without eating, etc. Everything we've been taught throughout the years. And it's just not true. Like, we know that it's not true anymore. So I think that the ketogenic diet lends itself to being able to go against these norms that society has set up for us. And in turn, I think it promotes a healthier relationship with food, despite it being very restrictive. But that's just me. I can see how being obsessed with the ketogenic diet, or like a way of eating, can cause an unhealthy relationship with food. But to me, a healthy relationship with food is being able to like forget that you need to eat or something like that. Like, not constantly being thinking about your next meal and being like stressed over, oh, my family's going out for dinner, what am I going to be able to eat? Like, I don't think like that anymore. And I used to a lot, which I only now realize that there is another side to health. And it's having a healthy relationship with food definitely has been a big part of my health journey.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point to make, is that when you do this ketogenic diet and you do it correctly, you really do disconnect yourself from the shackles of having to feed every 2 hours. Like, that paradigm that we've all been living in, where if people don't eat within a certain period of time, they're just a slave to their blood sugar levels. They're a slave to their their self embodied belief that they have to refuel. And yeah, to some aspect they kind of do, because that's kind of what it's like when you run off glucose. Exactly. And it's definitely something that, now it's weird, because when you're on the other side of the fence and you're looking over at everyone and you're just seeing them just having to feed, you're just like, guys, like, this is literally why this whole system is in place. It is in place because of this this desire to feed all the time. Like, we have to keep producing food, and it's completely unnatural. Like you said, like, we never ever in our evolutionary history would have had access to food 24/7 hours of the day. And if we did, by the very small chance that we did, it would not have been the food that we decide to eat within that 24-hour period. And
look back at the way I was eating before, just like so much, like eating in abundance, and that's kind of what drew me to a high carb low fat diet, was because I was like seeing all these girls on Instagram, like all these cute, like young, slim girls. And I was just like imitating what they were doing, and they were promoting abundance and being able to eat all the time. And then I started learning the science behind the ketogenic diet and everything. And I was like, I don't want to eat all the time. Like, why would I want to be feeding my body? It's like, it's a stressor. Like if your digestion is running constantly, it's just like a mild stressor on your body. We need periods without food so that we can recover. We can activate these pathways, these longevity pathways, and promote just overall health and reduce inflammation and, yeah, be in tune with your true hunger signals. And that just all of that is just largely silenced in today's society. So yeah, another benefit.
I think it's definitely, it will be an epidemic moving into the future, just in terms of the malnutrition that it's really going to become very apparent. And yeah, I mean, you get a lot of these influencers that are on picture perfect shape. Like, you look at them and you're like, fuck man, you're like, you're in really good shape, so your diet must be on point. But there's a lot of variables to this equation that go over people's heads that they don't necessarily fully understand. And yeah, I mean, obviously you've got the whole epigenetic factors involved, but there is such thing as genetic wealth, in that you can inherit a lot of good, you can inherit a good head start in life if your grandparents, your parents before you, were ate pretty good. And most people of our generation, I'm guessing that we're pretty similar in age as well, Christy. So our parents would have, generally speaking, would have been raised on a more traditional diet before the food industry really got industrialized and it really started pumping out all of the GMO shit. And then the parents before them, grandparents, would have been raised on an even more traditional diet, and so on, dating back, which means that there would have been a genetic wealth that would have been passed down through generation after generation. So we are at an interesting point because we're kind of like the generation before, our generation and maybe a generation before us, we're going to be the first to experience the fading of this genetic wealth. And although you may get some people on Instagram that look the part and they either be a vegan, be a vegetarian, eventually they're gonna use up all of that genetic wealth that they inherited, and they're not gonna pass that genetic wealth onto their children, and their children are gonna begin to suffer. Yeah. So this is definitely something that needs to be taken care of, and it's the exact same as like if you keep taking, you've got a bank account, you've got X amount of money in that's kept your family afloat for generations, and then one generation is just completely reckless and just blows the lot in one lifetime, and now their children are in debt. And that's pretty much what it's going to be like on a physiological level, where you're not going to be able to get away with the same food choices. And definitely with the increase in the amount of chemicals, pollutants, the strengths that's going to be increased with the pesticides, the herbicides, fungicides, insecticides, all of that, that's only going to be amplified, and that's only going to have more of a severe effect. So we're definitely at a fork in the road where we need a dramatic paradigm shift within the way that we look at food and the way that we interact with it. And this, the ketogenic diet is it's not the savior, but I feel like everyone needs to at least get fat adapted. You need to build that, what Mark Sisson calls like that metabolic flexibility, that metabolic machinery to allow you to have the freedom. Whereas if you go a day where it's like, fuck, it's a busy day today and I'm just going to crack on, I don't need to eat, fine. That's great. That's what we need. We need to liberate ourselves. Whereas we can fall in too easily into just, yeah, becoming enslaved to our choice on food. And it literally consumes people. Like you said, it consumes people's day-to-day consciousness of what they're thinking about. Like, they could be at work and they could have a project that they're trying to crack on with, and they're going to be like 70-30 in on this. Like 70% of their mind's gonna be thinking, right, what am I for dinner? Ooh, what's for lunch? Ooh, I could do with that. And then when you're in this sort of fat adapted state and you're doing a fasted state, yeah, you don't worry about it. And this is one of the things that I wanted to lead on to with the next question is, if people were to come to you and ask you, like, what's a good way to introduce yourself to this? Because I always go on my podcast, like, I expect people to just know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about ketogenic this and fast this. And I wanted to have someone on who can maybe come from the other angle and be like, well, this is a good entry point. These are some of the issues that people face when they're first doing the ketogenic diet, when they're first starting to implement it. Because I never had any of the issues. I kind of just got on with it because I was always in pretty good nick, to be honest. So what was your experience with that transition, and what would you advise other people to do?
Yeah. So if you understand like how the body enters ketosis, then it's easier to understand the diet and why you're eating a certain way. So like to enter ketosis, you first say you're starting with a 24-hour fast, which seems absurd to some people, but that would be the easiest way to start a ketogenic diet, like to get into ketosis. But it's also a really easy way to picture the body and what happens when we're in ketosis. So we're going to burn through all our circulating fuel first, which that's pretty limited. So we burn through our glucose in our blood, and then we start going converting our liver glycogen into glucose. So our liver will start releasing glucose into the blood, and then we will, once that's emptied, we'll tap into gluconeogenic amino acids. So at first you do break down a little bit of your muscle, but that only lasts like at most a week, and they've shown that like nitrogen excretion slows and becomes normal after you become keto adapted. But at first, yeah, you might burn through a little bit of amino acids, and that's going to come from your muscles. But that overlaps with ketogenesis. So at the same time, your body's realizing your insulin's really low, your glucagon is up. These are two hormones that regulate our metabolism. And we need glucagon high and we need insulin low in order to activate ketogenesis. So then the pool of acetyl-CoA is going to build up in our liver from fatty acid oxidation. And these are going to start creating ketones. It's going to enter our blood. It's going to go to our brain. And during the keto adaptation, our brain will primarily be using ketones. Our muscles will be using fatty acids. And we'll be producing the minimal amount of glucose that our body needs to survive, even in the absence of food altogether. So that's obviously a myth that's been debunked a bunch of times, is that we need glucose. We don't need glucose. Our body will make it in the absence of food, in the absence of carbs. So when you understand that you need insulin low and you need glucagon high, you can wrap your head around the macronutrient ratios of a ketogenic diet, which is obviously very low in carbohydrates. But for someone entering into this world of ketogenic nutrition, honestly, you just have to think about, okay, if you think about every meal like an opportunity to keep insulin low, then you realize like, okay, that carrot or this portion of carrots, like, yes, it's a vegetable. There's nothing inherently bad with a carrot, but it does have the potential to spike my glucose a little bit. That's going to spike insulin in return, and insulin inhibits ketogenesis. So you kind of, it all ties back to insulin. This is the way I look at it though. Like I'm very like, I analyze my body. I'm like, what am I putting in my mouth? And then what is my liver doing? So I don't even know if I can speak to the average population, because I think I'm a little bit of a freak when it comes to food and nutrition. But I've definitely had to write about like the ketogenic diet for the average Joe. So if you set these carbohydrate limits, it's easier to stick to, and then tracking, like I said, it helps you in the beginning, but you just have to try not to be obsessed with it. But in order to understand where carbohydrates are coming from, people just don't know what foods have carbohydrates in it. Like, I just mentioned a carrot, and to me, that's a carb. But to someone else, maybe they're like, that's not a carb. That's just a vegetable. So you have to understand like what vegetables are actually low in carbs. And then once you get, it's really just a learning curve. You just have to get over the learning curve of understanding that, okay, these are the low carb veggies that I can have. So greens, like any greens of any sorts, like leafy greens, broccoli, cruciferous vegetables, cauliflower, zucchini, etc. I'm sure you could just Google low carb veggies and get a list of them. So understanding what are your like safe foods. And I think that getting in, like for someone starting out on a ketogenic diet, you just have to have that list of safe foods. And then from there, you learn what you like, and then you can customize it to your tastes, like your preferences. And then it becomes something that's sustainable when you make things taste good. And fat makes things taste good. So it's like a win-win. You're eating healthy, but you're also making foods taste really delicious. And then you get to eat steaks with fat, and you get to eat like all these delicious, but almost like, can't find the word that I'm looking for, indulgent foods that once you demonize, like bacon and eggs and things like that, where you're like, oh my God, this is so much fat and cholesterol. But they taste really good, and now you're allowed to eat them. So it's understanding what foods are your safe foods. And maybe you don't even restrict at first. You just get used to eating this way. And maybe you're not going to get into ketosis right away. But then once you get used to these foods, then you can start limiting portions. And then honestly, calories matter in terms of even just getting into ketosis. If you're overeating, you're still fueling your body with a lot. And if you eat, there is some truth to eating too much protein on a ketogenic diet. You can kick yourself out of ketosis with protein, but that doesn't mean that you should fear protein, because protein is so important. And I think that's another issue with the ketogenic diet, is people fear protein so much that they limit it too severely. And a lot of people that do the ketogenic diet are actually like, a lot of adults do it. And going into old age with muscle mass is one of the predictors of longevity. And if you're restricting protein and you're losing muscle mass, like that is setting you up for failure in old age. And I think it's so important for people to understand that you need enough protein to support your muscle mass, because it's so much harder to gain muscle once you're aging. And you really have, like, from your 20s to 30s, I think that's like your prime time to gain as much muscle as you can, but obviously in a healthy, sustainable way. But understanding that you don't have to restrict protein so much, but that you can overdo it. So basically, you just have to moderate protein, which is the definition of the ketogenic diet, where they say high fat, moderate protein, low carb. That's definitely a mistake people make, is fearing protein, fearing vegetables, and then just relying on these fatty, indulgent foods. Getting into, I'm trying to simplify this in my head of how someone can start with the ketogenic diet. And I think, it all comes down to understanding your safe foods and knowing what foods have carbs, but not obsessing over, like, if you have too many, like, I don't know. I don't want people to obsess over, okay, wow. I'm really rambling.
Whatever, Quincy, say it all, let it out.
Trying to gather my thoughts as I'm speaking out loud. Anyways, I think that tracking and understanding where carbs are in your foods is important for someone entering a ketogenic lifestyle. I'm gonna stop talking there.
That's fine, don't worry. It's I think we caught your gist, where you're coming out with that one. And this is something that I would actually like your opinion on, because obviously I can't talk from experience on this, and I've got a lot of people that ask me this, and I can only say so much from the literature I read. I can't talk from direct experience, but What's it like being in a ketogenic state as a female? Is there any differences that you find in your cycles, in your any issues that you run into that don't happen, that is not an issue that a male is faced with at all?
Yeah, so I haven't actually given this a ton of research because I don't think there is much research in terms of female like hormones and ketogenesis and just being in a state of ketosis. Like from an evolutionary perspective, it doesn't really make sense because you're in a state, you're mimicking fasting. And if you look at it that way, then you wouldn't want your body to be in a state of fasting when you're trying to reproduce. However, if you're eating enough calories and you're not calorie restricting, I actually got my period back using the ketogenic diet, which seems counterintuitive.
Yeah, I've heard that a few times.
Yeah. So when I was like low fat, vegan-ish, I lost my period and I didn't get it back for a year and a half, but I got it back using a ketogenic diet. And it's really interesting because this is a kind of a crazy story, but I was craving red meat. Like, I was still eating a ketogenic diet, but I just wasn't eating a lot of meat. I was doing primarily like a plant-based ketogenic diet. And one day I was just craving red meat. So I stopped at Whole Foods and bought liver and ooh, like grass-fed
brave
liver. And I cooked it up for myself and I got my period back like 2 days later. I was like, hey, this is not a coincidence. Clearly my body was telling me like, you need some nutrients, you need iron, like you need these things from this red meat that I was clearly craving. And I don't know, that's just a crazy story for me. And now I actually have noticed that my period is more regular around how much red meat I'm eating, which I'm not saying it's a coincidence. I think that there is definitely something to that. It's very interesting though.
Very interesting. If you had raw liver before?
No.
Oh, that's the next level for you, Christy. Give that a go. Might be a little bit far-fetched for some, but trust, it's tasty. For me, it's a much more of a I prefer the taste than I do as savage as it sounds, as I do cooked liver. There's something about cooked liver where, I don't know, it does taste very, like you said, irony. Whereas when you have it raw, it tastes quite clean and fresh, especially if it's like if it is like fresh in the butchers and it's from a real good source. It's something that I would definitely advise. And especially if you're in a ketogenic state, organ meats are some of the best because they've got a lot of the fat-soluble vitamins in that you would need. And obviously if you've got a lot of fat in your system, it allows you to be able to utilize them and really start to, have the building blocks for your sex hormones and everything else, loads of other sort of biochemical reactions in your body that are needing to take place for optimal health. So guys, if you're listening, raw liver, I've heard, a lady on Instagram, Christy, called, Dr. Nicole LePera, the holistic psychologist?
No, I don't.
Oh, wow. Okay, so what Nicole does is that she ferments raw liver. She puts it in a jar and just leaves it in the sun and just lets it rot.
Oh my gosh.
And I know this other guy that does it where he does that, and then he every so often he opens the jar, the mason jar, and spits on it. And then supposedly by spitting on it, it introduces the meat to your own sort of bacterial culture, and then that begins to develop with the meat itself, which then means when you eat it, then it's already sort of acclimatized as such to your own internal environment.
Okay, I thought I was a little crazy with my food, but
no, Christy, that you're just sitting on top of the iceberg. There are some levels to this, and yeah, I would say that's quite deep. I've heard of some deeper shit, but
I'm willing to try anything. Clearly, I like to experiment with diet, so I'm willing to experiment with this. I'll try.
Have you had heart before?
Pardon?
Have you had heart before?
I have, and it was really good. It didn't taste like liver is, there's a really like pungent taste to it, but heart, it just tasted like any meat to me.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It's yeah, it's delicious. You get some like ox heart, or I mean, over North America way, you could probably get hold some like bison heart or some real wild caught, wild caught animal heart. It's really good. It's like a real dense source of mitochondria, of PQQ, CoQ10. There's a lot of really good nutrients that you would struggle to find unless it was supplemental for unless it was intaken supplementally, is that a word? Yeah, you know what I mean. Then you can just get it in the organ meat itself, which leads me to another question: is do you take any supplements, either A, for your general like health and well-being, and B, to enhance your state of ketosis?
So I definitely am a component of using MCT oils, so, or powders. I have MCTs in my coffee every morning. I just, one, love the taste. Two, it boosts my ketones. And MCTs are kind of like an exogenous ketone, but kind of not, because you're actually producing the ketones in your liver, opposed to taking an exogenous ketone where the ketone is synthesized outside of your body. So that's why I really like MCTs. It just ramps up ketogenesis, gives me a good boost in the morning, and I love the taste. And I'm like not trying to restrict calories or anything, so I can have my fatty coffees and I love it and I enjoy it, and it's the best part
of it. Any specific type? Is it like a CA, C10 blend, or is it just...
I mean, preferably I would be taking... I actually don't know what one, what make the one I'm using right now is, but C8 is the most ketogenic. It will be rapidly converted to ketones, C10 next. And those are the only ones that are really found on the market, C8 and C10. C6, I think there's like a palatability issue with it. And then C12 actually acts like a long chain fatty acid, so it's not converted to ketones like C8 and C10. So preferably I would just be taking pure C8, but C10 will work too. But I think all of the MCTs on the market are pretty much have C8 in it. But yeah, so I use MCTs every day. I supplement vitamin D in the winter, but that's just kind of because I have the supplement there and not because I'm actively being like, oh, I need vitamin D. But I think vitamin D is really important. And I take melatonin at night. Those are all the supplements that I take.
Wow, and I mean, that's pretty reserved.
Yeah, I mean, I have been eating a lot of more organ meats as of recently, and I kind of look at that as a multivitamin. I don't supplement with anything else. Melatonin, I honestly think it's just a placebo thing. I don't actually know. I guess, like, I don't actually know if it works or not, but I just have that's just part of my routine. I take my melatonin and I go to sleep. But I know that I don't need it. Like, when I'm traveling and stuff, I don't use it. And I know that I still fall asleep fine. So that's why I think it's just a placebo, but I just like it. And I don't know. I don't think there's any harm in taking melatonin.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was wondering if you, like you said, that you briefly mentioned about the exogenous ketones, if you took any of them, or if you, because we are not allowed to sell exogenous ketones here in the UK.
Oh, seriously? Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah, I mean, I do experiment with exogenous ketones sometimes. I have found that my workouts are way better when I take exogenous ketones, and like I can just go for way longer. Like I don't get exhausted. I notice more so like cardio wise. So like I can be on the rower for a long time and not get exhausted like I would without exogenous ketones. So I use exogenous ketones sometimes. And just for like mental clarity, I think that I get a big boost in energy from them, but I don't necessarily rely on them. I just kind of, sometimes I even just use them to flavor my water because they taste good. But no, I don't use them every day, but I have a bunch because Dom gives me a lot of different supplements to try. And we do a lot of testing too. So not every exogenous ketone is the same. Some of them you'll boost BHB real fast, beta hydroxybutyrate, and it won't be prolonged. It'll just come right back down. And that's not a good supplement. You want exogenous ketones to make your BHB go up and sustain for like a good amount of time and then come back down, because otherwise you're just like, you're spiking BHB, but then it's not lasting in your blood, and you're probably just like peeing it out, or it's becoming very expensive urine.
Yeah, totally agree. And this actually, just a touch base on what you said then to do with your workouts, what is the big major differences that you have personally seen and experienced? Because obviously I know that you like to go to the gym and you're pretty active, and everyone can see this on your Instagram as well. What was the big differences for you? Did you see big increases in strength, in endurance? Was there things that you've seen that had like an adverse effect in that whole transition, or what's been your overall experience?
All of my experience has been positive. I literally have nothing negative to say about using the ketogenic diet with my fitness. So I do a lot of high intensity, which people will say, oh, like, don't do keto if you're doing high intensity, because these short bursts, like, they require glucose, but you have enough glycogen in your body. Once you're keto adapted, your glycogen stores go back to normal. Bullock and Finney have shown that glycogen stores will be restored to that of a high carb athlete. So you're not like lacking glycogen, and you can get glucose from your glycogen during a workout. I haven't had any problem with my high intensity training. Strength wise, I was kind of like starting from scratch again. I lost like all my muscle when I started like limiting my meat and everything and just not eating enough protein. I lost a lot of my muscle. And so when I started the ketogenic diet, I felt like I was kind of starting from scratch. So I was just building my strength up, and I've definitely gained a lot of muscle and a lot of strength being on a ketogenic diet. And I think that that is in part due to the amount of meat that I've been eating. And I have noticed I feel so much better eating meat and eating, and I'm still in ketosis all the time. And my workouts have been the best that they ever have been. Like I said, my endurance wise, like I can just go for so long. And I think like after doing the research and realizing like our lactic acid buildup and everything like that, and our recovery is better on a ketogenic diet. We're producing less oxidative stress, and it's just like a less inflammatory state for the body. So we're able to recover faster. And I think, like, I don't know, like, it's not like I'm measuring my inflammation or CRP or anything, but I definitely feel that I am in the best shape of my life being on a ketogenic diet and training this way. But I'm gaining strength and I feel good. And I think that's the best teller of whether I'm doing something right or wrong. If I can wake up in the morning really energized and get to the gym and be able to do a fasted workout. Like I work out fasted every day. I don't like eating before I work out. And I have so much energy. So it's clearly, I definitely can like ketogenesis and being in ketosis definitely contributes to this amount of energy and my sustainability in the gym. I've noticed a really positive benefit to eating keto and my training.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with what you're saying. Very much the same for me. Like all the workouts that I do are going to be in a fasted state. And there is a myth that you can't build muscle on a ketogenic diet, which I think is a lot of bullshit. I think the more and more that people become interested and attuned to this, the more there will be an ask for the research. And when the research is done, then there will be the evidence. Whereas at the moment, there's just not much research that's done in comparison to the research that's done on a glucose-based diet. So
yeah, exactly. And there's the like anti-catabolic effect of ketones. So you're sparing your lean muscle mass in a state of ketosis. That's the whole evolutionary aspect of the diet, was so that we wouldn't waste away. We could go long periods without food and not break down our muscle. That's a huge component of the ketogenic diet and being in ketosis.
Yeah, it's interesting how distorted the real like reality has become over this. Like just the picture that's sort of programmed into us from a young age of what happens when you don't eat, or if you don't get enough protein, if you don't refuel correctly, what's going to happen? And it's completely inverted to the truth. It's like complete polar opposite. And it's,
or like the people that drink their protein shakes during their workouts in the gym. I'm like, okay, that whole like post feeding eating window after a workout, I'm pretty sure it's been like
debunked. That anabolic window, bro, you gotta get it in. It's a scary time. If you don't get it in with those 30 minutes, you might as well have not worked out. You might as well have just sat on the couch and watched some Netflix. But it's I'm definitely excited for the research to come, to start to come through. There is like a new generation of scientists that are doing the good work behind the scenes. And obviously it does take a little bit of while for research to come out, and not just come out, but then to go through a lot, the whole sort of procedure of becoming peer reviewed and then making it into mainstream thought.
Yeah. So, and it's crazy how much the science has grown though in just like the past, like 10 years. It's really, really impressive. And I've been involved with Metabolic Health Summit, which just happened in January, February of this year. And Dom is one of the organizers of that conference. And it's just so amazing to see all these scientists, like how many speakers there are and how many different components of the ketogenic diet there are. Like we had talks on autism, we had talks on canines, like ketogenic nutrition for canines. Like there's so many applications that are so new, and it's really, really cool to see the science expand like this, because it's helping so many people, like all these neurological disorders that ketones can play a role in and protect our brain. And as we age, and I think it's going to be normal for people to take exogenous ketones past the age of like 45 or something. Or if you get your genetics tested and you have an APOE4 allele that sets you up or predisposes you to Alzheimer's, Stephen Kunain, a researcher from Quebec, he has shown that, yeah, as we age, we lose glucose metabolism, like the function of glucose metabolism slows, but ketone metabolism doesn't. So if you can bypass that energy deficit in the brain, which can lead to cognitive decline, because our neurons clearly need energy to repair and restore and keep our brain functioning, if we can give our brain ketones early on in life and prevent that from happening, there's such huge implications for that. And Alzheimer's is such a devastating effect of aging, and it's become normal. Like so many of my friends that I talk to, we all talk about how our, like one of our grandparents has Alzheimer's, or someone is in a,
my grandma has Alzheimer's.
Yeah. Same with my grandma. And it's really sad. And I think that this type of research it's so easy to implement, especially if we're talking about exogenous ketones, like it's just, or MCT oil. It's so easy to be like, okay, drink this delicious coffee and you'll give energy to your brain. Like it's just, it's an easy, delicious thing to do instead of just like taking a pill. But yeah, there's just so many, my point is that there's just so many applications that apply to the general public as a whole. And I think that the more the science expands, the more we're going to see better outcomes as we age.
Yeah, we've had our head in the sands for a long time, and it seems like everything was there in plain sight. All the answers we need were there in plain sight, and we've just continuously just overlooked it because we were so deeply entrenched in one paradigm, one way of thinking of this is the body, this is how it works, this is what the science shows. But then again, the science is only showing, it's kind of almost like a form of confirmation bias, because it's only showing the research that's been done, and the research has been done for a reason, if that makes sense. So there's definitely so much room for progression, so much room to still discover plenty more depths of this ketogenic diet in the benefits that it has on our physical health, our mental health, and even in going into the non-material, I'm sure it has some effects there as well, which is going to be probably a few light years away before we start taking interest in that yet, but all in due time. And yeah, Christy, just looking at the clock, we're going to tie this one in. It's been great having you on and great talking to you. I would have liked a little bit more time just to pick your brain some more, because I know that we're only just scratching the surface here, but maybe that's a good lead up to a second appearance on here with you. I think that would be great.
Yeah, and me too.
Yeah, we can cover a few more subjects in the process. But for now, for everyone that's enjoyed everything that you've had to say, whereabouts can they find more about you? Like, what's your sort of social media handles? You got a website? Where can they contact you easiest if they wanted to follow up from this podcast and sort of get some little bit of one-to-one feedback off you directly?
Yeah, I wish I could say I had a website. That should definitely be something I should look into. But for now, you can find me on Instagram. It's at Christy Stores, KristiStores. Thought that my last name was a little too long to put my full name in there, but that's where I'm most active. That's where you can find me. I really just write for other platforms. I'm more of a freelance writer, and so, but I should get a website and get all my work up on there too.
It would be helpful. It would be helpful, Christy.
It's been a pleasure being a guest, and I'm really happy you invited me on, Chris. It's been fun.
Yeah, thank you. And it's and for everyone that's listening, this is Christy's first podcast as well, so she smashed it out of the park on this one. This is only the beginning. Christy's destined for big things within this industry, so keep an eye on her. She's definitely a bright mind with a lot of cool shit to say, and like everyone that I have on here, she not only can she talk the talk, but she walks the walk as well. Everything that she says, she does embody. And yeah, it was great having you on, Christy. So thanks again for coming on. And to tie this one up, guys, that is the end of episode 52. So please give us some feedback, get in touch with myself, get in touch with Christy, let us know what you think. Hopefully you enjoyed it. As always, stay woke as fuck, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Peace out.